Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back. 803 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So, Coach Culley, yesterday in his press conference, addressed the declining the penalty. For those of you who don't know, 3rd and 15, Texans on their own 35, maybe they were at their own, close to their own 40-yard line, pick up 13 yards on 3rd and 15. So it's 4th and 2, but there was an offsides penalty against the Browns. Coach Culley declined the penalty and then punted. Now, he's thinking about field position, but you're there's absolutely no way to justify it.
You can't justify it.
Made no sense. It doesn't make any sense. You give your offense another shot at 3rd and 10 and see if they can't make a first down.
And then
you can punt. Actually, he punted it into the end zone anyway, so you actually could have used that 10 yards back. So he would have hit one inside the 10. So the whole thing was just bad. And Coach Culley yesterday admitted it.
The first thing that went through my mind was, and I was a little frustrated at that time because I was thinking field position. I did not want to do anything to hurt us. And then because Cam, as a punter, we had the ball right there about the 49-yard line. I figured that, you know, he's been very, very good at being able to pin him back. And I was thinking that, but again, that was just out of frustration on my part because of the series that we were having at that time. But no, if I had that to do over again, I would take the penalty and give our offense a chance to get the first down, which is what I should have done.
I appreciate that.
I got nothing but respect for that because that's not something Bill O'Brien would have done. Bill O'Brien would have, and not just Bill O'Brien, a lot of coaches would have deflected. They would have become defensive at the question. And
I
it's
know
a real question.
Analytics has those things out there.
Yeah, and they do. And they do. But what David Culley did was he humbled himself. He admitted a mistake. He did something that the rest of America should consider doing. It's an issue throughout our society is where you can't just have a mea culpa and say, you know what, that's on me. Gary Kubiak, of course, would do that a lot. But David Culley basically just
said,
well,
Gary Kubiak did that for
everybody.
That's on me.
Like
that's on me.
To say other
that's
stuff.
That's on me. Yeah, and it wasn't.
But David Culley just said, I shouldn't have done it. He explained why he did it and said, I shouldn't have done it. And I think he gained a lot of respect from a lot of people. And I put it out on Twitter. I copied and pasted it from the actual press conference. I cut it and pasted it because I wanted everyone to see this nationally as well. And he got a lot of love for it because we respect, granted, the bar's a little lower with the way Bill O'Brien would react at press conferences. But this is really a head coaching thing where rarely do you just admit a mistake. David Culley went out there, and it has to be embarrassing. This is a second job. This is a second game as a head coach. It was widely panned. We all knew it was a bad, bad move, but he just took complete ownership of a bad decision, didn't blame it on anyone else, and admitted, I would do it all over again. He didn't say, look, there's different ways you can do this. I did a way that, you know, would I do it again? I don't know. I'd have to wait until the moment. If the moment occurred, maybe I'd do it again. Maybe I wouldn't. You know, one of those answers. He said, yeah, I'd do it.
I'd do it different.
I screwed up. I wish if I had to do it all over again, I would do it the different way. And I just have so much respect for his honesty in that.
Yeah. I didn't love the call as much.
No. None of that changes.
No. But certainly, you know, owning up to it. And, you know, after the game, he was like, tried to explain it, and it was just not a good explanation. And, again, you and I talked about it. It's on his resume now. We'll see. I don't know how much it's going to hurt him that he was able to own up to it and admit his mistake. That's great. Chris is here. He wants to talk about Greg Zuerlein. What do you say, Chris?
What's up, guys? Hey, love you guys' show.
Thanks,
hey, Lance, I was reading Ian Rappaport's deal yesterday about Carson Wentz. I know you and Ballard are friends. Is Ballard just trying to one-up your injury there by having his quarterback sprain both of his ankles? I've never heard of that happening.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't talk to him. The double ankle injury for Carson. Look, Carson Wentz's injury history is when I was digging in on his you know, it's easy for people to say, no, a guy's not injury prone. He broke his wrist. You know, what are you going to do about that? There's nothing you can do about that. I went through all the way to his high school, days, because I wanted to check on this. Let me see if I've got it. I think I've got it here on my draft profile. And he has injuries. Let's see. He had injuries, dealt with arm and shoulder injuries as a baseball player in high school. This is Carson Wentz. Dealt with arm and shoulder injuries as a baseball player in high school, broke a bone in his throwing wrist in October, sidelining him for 8 weeks when he was a senior at North Dakota State. He had a back issue in high school, and he had that foot issue in camp that went all the way, that dated all the way back to high school as well. Like, this is a guy who has had issues dating all the way back to high school. He's injury prone. There's no other way to say it. I mean, double sprained ankles, a foot issue before camp. He had a back issue in high school. He had arm and shoulder issues from being a pitcher in baseball. He is a guy who has dealt with, there was another injury in Philadelphia, whatever it was, it knocked him out for the year with Nick Foles. Did you forget about that one? So when you deal with guys who have that kind of injury history, eventually it's going to come back and get you. The same thing is going to happen to Miami. Miami's going to find out.
That tackle that he injured himself on?
Yeah, it was legit.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to do?
I don't know anybody that wouldn't have been injured on that.
100%. I just think that it's either extremely bad luck dating all the way back to high school, or maybe he doesn't bounce back as well from some hits. Because there's some hits in the NFL where you look, or somebody gets a leg rolled up. Like, I thought Laremy Tunsil was going to be done for the game. Laremy Tunsil came back. I thought Laremy Tunsil was done. People thought they were going to have to amputate my leg after I fell in that ditch.
No.
But here I am. Hmm. I mean, you know, some people are able to bounce back stronger.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Nobody thought that, but okay.
I don't have double sprained ankles.
Okay. Doubles. You have one.
But... Yeah, I had one, but I didn't sprain the other one. Carson Wentz sprained them both.
Yeah.
Injury prone. Me? No. Not injury prone. Sprained one.
Kind of a little bit injury prone. But okay.
Going after a frisbee disc. By the way, somebody went over there. This is the kind of hateful listeners we have.
Did they find your disc?
No, I think somebody went looking for it. But this guy comes over. He sent a picture. He goes, "Ooh, this is a pretty steep ditch, Lance." He took a picture of the spot. You don't want to. No one wants to. See the picture of where that happened.
Pothole or what was it?
It would have been. I don't know. I don't know what it would have looked like where I fell, but I do know that somebody literally took their Southside Richie or something like that. He did take the time to go over to that park, literally where we talk about, and took a picture and like, "Ooh, this looks steep, Lance." It is steep.
I don't think that was hateful. I think that was. That was probably, you know, he was probably to be helpful.
So here's an example, John. This is what we were talking about. And yesterday, there were people so mad. One guy called it the worst decision. David Culley's decision was the worst in the history of the NFL.
Well, like, that's a little much.
I said, don't you think this is a little bit hyperbole? He just kept going on and on. And other people wanted to make sure that, yeah, but that's still terrible. We know it's a terrible decision. Look, it's ultimately going to cost him his job at some point. The Texans aren't going to believe in him. That's what's going to happen. But that doesn't change the fact that that's awesome that he was accountable. He had accountability. Mm-hmm. Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby have pushed everything off on everybody for the last two or three years and said, "No, it's Brian Gaines' fault. No, it's this person's fault.
It's not my job to do that.
No, we got to get this person out of here. The equipment guy, he's got to go." You know how many people they got rid of? And Bill O'Brien wouldn't take any accountability. He literally said, "It's not my job to do that." Wasn't that about clock management?
It was about not calling a timeout when Gronk didn't catch the ball. And the refs didn't call because he wanted.
Apparently he's got a guy who's up in the booth who helps him with whether or not he should challenge. And the guy in the booth, it didn't come down.
Well, whoever that guy was terrible at his job.
He was terrible. But you know what you're Bill O'Brien? When you're the head coach and the buck stops here, you say, yeah, I mean, we got to, even if you don't want to say you can say
it wasn't that. It was that he didn't call a timeout. So to give the refs some time to look at it, not that he should have challenged it, but he didn't call a timeout. So the refs could challenge it because it was late in the game.
The head coach.
Yeah.
Said it's not my job.
I mean, and actually. That's exactly your job.
But that's classic. That's Bill O'Brien telling you that somebody...
The next day, he did come back, though, and say, "I just want to clarify this," and blah, 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 blah. He did somewhat own up to the fact that he should have done something differently. Not quite to the effect of Coach Cully's explanation yesterday, but somewhat.
Well, Coach Cully's was a little bit garbled. I didn't understand all of it. I just knew that he was taking responsibility and accountability. And I'm just telling you right now, when people do that, I give them a big round of applause. I don't care if it's politically, which never happens. I don't care if it's my coach. And a friend of the show here is listening, said, I love Cully. Totally cheering for the Texans again. I stopped because Bill O'Brien was such a clown.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so impressed with the effort the team has played with so far this year. I think we
I agree.
I think everyone is.
I agree with all that.
I do get some people on Twitter who are still like, they want to make sure that you know that they still are mad at the Texans. You can totally be out on the Texans and respect the head coach.
No, I'm rooting for him again. I am. Because of Coach Cully, in large part, because he seems like a very nice person, as opposed to I had so much Bill O'Brien fatigue. Honest to God, I just couldn't look at him and say, "Man, I got to root for that guy." Not that a hole. I wasn't rooting for him. 8:14, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Time to talk about hoops now, and we got some hoops news that we got to get to. Actually, as a matter of fact, but right now we got to talk about the goal in your backyard. Moms, dads, you're listening right now. The kids want to play. They want to have fun. Even the big kids want to have fun. Now, I've talked about, hey, the youngsters, they can't reach that 10-foot goal. They can't have any fun. They're still going to be sitting in the house because they can't make baskets on a 10-foot goal. Well, how about lowering the goal for those kids? But you know who else likes to lower the goal? The big kids. They love that too, so they can play above the rim. Everybody loves to play above the rim. They watch the pros playing above the rim. Well, guess what? They want to play above the rim too. And when you go to the website, that's all you see is the kids dunking all the time. And you know what they wouldn't be able to do on a 10-foot goal? Dunk, because they're not that athletic. Sorry, Dad. Your kid's not that athletic. But he can be on a hoops goal because you can raise and lower it. You got the best goal in the world. I'm telling you, you will love everything about it. The installation, the product, everything. All at ProDunkHoops.com. Go to ProDunkHoops.com. Tell Keith Tate you heard it right here.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, 8:17, ESPN, 97.5, 92.5. This is the Sean thing. Joe from H-Town. Yeah, Mike Florio, and this is what we talked about. Mike Florio said, you know what, this is a perfect situation because the Texans aren't playing him, so the league doesn't have to do anything. We talked about that. Once he starts playing, that's when the league would step in and possibly discipline him. Doesn't mean they would discipline him, but they would possibly discipline him. Joe says, well, suit him up for one play and take his ass out. Boom. League suspends him. Not necessarily. If you put him in for one play. And, oh, by the way, this is as much the Texans as it is. The Texans don't want him on the field. The Texans don't want him in their uniform. They don't want him in their uniform representing the Houston Texans, especially at the quarterback position, especially at the most important position on the team. They just don't. That's just not Texans worthy. It's just not. And we've joked about Texans worthy before, but that's what it is. He's not Texans worthy. Not anymore. 713-780-3776.
So I was curious, you know, last week some of the takes I read, like I said, week one, and what's disappointing is it's NFL, former NFL players on Twitter. It's like Mike Freeman last year, Louis Riddick. Cam had a good first game last year, really good first game. And all the talk was how the Patriots robbed him and stole money from him and all this and that. And then it turns out that Cam, it just happened to be a good game because the rest of the year was bad. But to go out of your way to make the hottest of takes in week one, pro or negative, is a very dangerous situation unless you have a known commodity. With Cam, you kind of did, but you also, if you knew the Patriots, you knew that they didn't have a lot of help around him. And you kind of want to see Cam operate. He's coming off a shoulder injury. You wanted to see him do a little bit more. But everyone wants to be right so quickly that they fire off on Twitter. And I saw the same thing happen, but on the flip side with Aaron Rodgers, where people decided that he was done after last week. And that this was, and they spent too much time on Aaron Rodgers. I mean, and I played, and I even told you, the gun to the head contest, put a gun to those same people's heads, said, okay, I've got the answer. We've come from the future, and I know what's going to happen. Do you think Aaron Rodgers is going to continue to play poorly or will play well? I'll bet you when they're not on Twitter performing and they have to actually answer, the gun to the head contest turns into, he'll perform well. Then why are you saying on Twitter that you think this, that, or the other? And I get JerMichael Finley is a guy who has personal beef with Aaron Rodgers. Did anyone really come away from, especially that man, that one matchup, thinking that Jameis Winston was a better quarterback than Aaron Rodgers? That was the talk in some circles.
No.
Like, y'all have to be crazy about the, about this based on one game. I've seen enough of Jameis to know that I need to see it more. There's a chance Jameis can turn into a good quarterback under Sean Payton. There is that chance, but I got to see it more because the history is just too troubling. With Aaron Rodgers, he's literally coming off of an MVP season, and his demise, the discussion about his demise because he wasn't into football and all the discussion with the Packers. Now, not being ready game one, absolutely I could buy into that. What ends up happening on the spicy hot takes, Jameis goes in the toilet against Carolina, who, by the way, is a good defense. So that's going to be... That's going to be one to keep an eye on for the Texans. But what does Aaron Rodgers do? He throws for four touchdowns, just a ho-hum four-touchdown performance. He looks, you know, he's right back on track for his touchdown total to be in the high 30s, and he looks just fine. Why would anyone ever come out there with the hot take in week one about Aaron Rodgers? Instead of just saying what Randy Moss said? No, Stephen A. Smith said this. He said it yesterday. I heard it when I was watching. He said, that's a bad game. Sometimes you have a bad game. Ryan Clark said that. Guys, it's a bad game. We all have bad games sometimes. Why is it that one player is bad game and these other guys are like, I don't know. He just wasn't ready. The being ready part, I do buy into that after his offseason. But to doubt the MVP coming off that season like he was done after a bad game against the Carolina, against the Saints. And these are analysts and former players saying this. Like, why
that's,
can't we?
That's sad, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, it's R-E-L-A-X, and it was the first week. And he was, Darren said it too. Are we gripping over one game? Over week one, really? Because it's going to be a long season if that's the case. But I will say this. Aaron Rodgers made some throws yesterday that I was like,
he wasn't razor sharp.
No, he was not razor sharp. I mean, there were plenty of throws. You were like, that's not that good. He's not an MVP form Aaron Rodgers right now.
I think he's working his way back to what he wants it to be.
Not having a preseason hurt him.
I think it mattered. Yeah. I think not having preseason work, even if he's not playing a preseason, not having that camp work, being a hold-in hurts. Or whatever. Well, he wasn't a hold-in. He was basically waiting until everything got done exactly the way he was. He did get into camp eventually. But, it absolutely hurt him. I just can't believe the stupid stuff that continues to be said on Twitter on a regular basis, but by people who do this, either do this for a living or played the game for a living, when they know better than to just go balls to the walls on one guy and seem to be out on a guy who's the MVP last year. Like, why in the world would you do that? Put yourself on record like that.
Yeah. No,
you know, that's the society we live in, right? Like Stephen A. Smith, Skip Bayless, they get rewarded for doing that. And so everybody else has just jumped on that train and gone, well, I don't have to be right. This take doesn't have to be right 3 weeks from now. It just has to be right now.
Here's the latest.
And I'll secure the bag.
How about this one? Here's the latest. Now, I think Ben Roethlisberger, the Steelers should be, I thought they should have maybe looked at quarterback in last year's draft. Like, to me, Ben is pretty much done. But Ben is their starting quarterback. They decided to go another year. This is what the hot take question was yesterday. How did you like this? Should Ben Roethlisberger be benched to give them a chance to win? Here's their backups, Mason Rudolph and Dwayne Haskins. Should he be benched? Michael Irvin said, Stephen A. Smith said, no, he shouldn't be benched because it's really not on Ben. While he's not that great, he gets the ball out quick, he's got a problem with his offensive line. They can't run the ball. Like, they can't run the ball. That's not on Ben. Ryan Clark took it a step further and said, they can't run block or pass block. They can't do any of... What did Michael Irvin say? That's my point. You're making my point for me. if you can't run block, if you're not able to run the football, if Ben needs the running game to be successful, then you got to go to a different quarterback.
What?
Well, Haskins is as pockety as pocket gets, and Mason Rudolph is just, he's also not going to be a guy who functions well without a running game. Michael, you played. Why would you say, if you can't run the ball well, you've got to sit Ben Roethlisberger, because then it gives them the best chance to win if you sit Ben Roethlisberger. He's like, and Ryan Clark's like, dude, nobody on the team is better. There is not a better quarterback on the roster than Ben Roethlisberger right now. What are you saying?
Yeah. No,
I feel sorry.
We're not
for
any good. We're not any good. So hey, we can't run the ball. So let's put in a lesser quarterback. Let's put a lesser quarterback in there so we'll get better. What? Now what now? 825 ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5. Did you see Garrett Cole got booed off the mound in Yankee Stadium in his final start?
Yep.
Well, they got their ass handed to him by Cleveland. He got their ass handed to him by Cleveland. But still, he's got a start in Fenway and in Toronto next weekend.
So
I'm going
to
tell you this.
To get to
you go
wins.
Ahead and John Sterling calls. John Sterling, their announcer, he put that out there. He goes, Garrett Cole leaves and gets booed. Gee, he's been carrying this team all year. And he really has. I mean,
he has, but he has had a couple of memorable explosion moments.
Yeah.
But this is what we talked about. When you play in New York, you better be prepared for what comes with it, which is enormous attention, and some of the attention is not always going to be fair. Now, if you win a World Series for them and pitch great, you're going to be Mr. Yankee, but you better buy into it, buy into the culture of being a Yankee. Everything, you better be able to take the booze and tell the fans, hey, you're right. You know, I got to pitch better than that. I don't get mad at the fans at all. Then they'll respect you. But you have to be careful what you want. When you decide you want to go play for the Mets or the Yankees, as Lindor's finding out also, you better be careful, because that's an entirely different animal when you go play in New York. And I know the money is better, but tax rate's also going to be higher for you. But I know the money's better, but you better be ready, because if you stumble at all, there's repercussions. We wouldn't have had any repercussions. Oh man, Garrett,
tough outing.
You think people at Minute Maid are going to boo somebody Zach Greinke off the mound?
No.
Would anyone ever boo Zach Greinke off the?
No.
No.
And he's been crap.
Verlander, none of those guys. That's what he signed up
Why
for.
Why don't we have a dress like Greinke day at the ballpark? Everybody dresses like Greinke.
I'd be good with it.
Of course, no, you can't. No backpacks, though, please. No backpacks. We can't do that anymore. Not in 2021.
Which, you've got Marwin, who went out and now has come back. Do you think he might be having a little conversation with Carlos of, hey, man, they might be promising you an extra $20 million that the Astros won't, but when you get out there and you go to a team like the Yankees who will just pay you, it's not as nice of an environment. You go 0-3, and all of a sudden they hate your guts. Here you go 0-5, and everybody's like, "Oh, it's okay."
And that was Minnesota too, which is a lot easier.
And he played
market.
In Boston too, where they didn't have any love for him too.
No, well, yeah, but that was after he'd been suck for a while. He's just been. Listen, you perform like Marwin did in Minnesota and Boston. You deserve to get booed.
Marwin had trash cans that helped him in 17. That's on the record.
Did he have a trash can last night with his grand slam? No,
no.
Maybe.
I'm sorry, was that a road game?
Yes,
John?
It was a road game.
They snuck in.
Did they win in L.A.? Did they win the title in L.A.? You know, that's where they wore the buzzers. One of the things I saw online is trash cans at home, buzzers on the road. That's one of the conspiracy theories out
gotcha.
There. It was a... Yeah,
up,
you couldn't
they got
have
the
possibly
camera
beat
set
the,
up,
You they couldn't got, have beat the Dodgers in any game.
No. So they got the cameras set up on the road stadiums?
That's irrelevant.
Okay.
How it happened is irrelevant, John. You just need to know buzzers and cans.
Gotcha. You just need to know all state is what you need to know.
All state sign-in windows. You really do. For those of you right now who have window issues, and here's how you know. If you have original windows from your original installation and building, my house was built in the early 60s, and we had original windows. And, man, when it got cold outside, it sucked. And when it got warm outside, we leaked too much air conditioning, and too much cold got in, too much cool got out. And when you make the switch over to the Allstate siding and windows, double pane, double strength windows, you get a few different things going on here. First and foremost, you get windows that are retrofit into the space so that you don't have leakage. They're retrofit and measured specifically for that. So they're custom. They're customized for your window space. Then you're going to get something that keeps noise out, so it becomes a much quieter home. Then you are going to have energy efficiency like you never imagined. And that includes if you get your siding done with their siding company. They can give you $2,000 off of a full job installation on siding and 25% off of your window installations. These windows and siding look beautiful, and it's a great way to give a facelift to the exterior of your home and really improve the energy efficiency. Allstate window, Allstate Siding and Windows.com. That's Allstate Siding and Windows.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. The Kings are on the air. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So Lance and I were just talking, you know, and a lot of times, not maybe not in a short series, you can have, I think you can afford fewer pitchers. What do you do now with Siri, with McCormick, with Marwin, Aledmus? How many bench guys can you afford to have? You got a five-game series against the White Sox, or we'll see if the Astros are able to catch the Rays. Maybe it's the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Blue Jays, whatever. But you're going to have a problem. Siri is coming up with some really big hits. He's fantastic. I don't know that you would start Siri in a postseason game, but in a pinch hit situation with Maldonado at the plate in the eighth inning. Myers, I thought, was a lock to be a postseason starter. Now, I don't know so much anymore. I mean, it just seems like Dusty, he's in love with McCormick and with Siri. Not getting at-bats every day, I think, is hurting Myers. All of a sudden, you got a wealth. There's riches all over the place. And Aledmus makes a team. Aledmus has been there all the year, done that. But Marwin now coming up and getting starts and coming through and hitting home runs and actually looking decent at the plate for the first time since he left. Siri, spectacular. Led off the game yesterday with a home run. He's not going to take Altuve's place at the top of the order, but that sure was nice. Boom. And dude just stands. He stands in a little bat flip. But I'm telling you, you got some issues. You got issues with Greinke. You, Odorizzi, who's a veteran. And, you know, his feelings were hurt earlier this year. If he's not on the postseason roster, how much is that going to hurt? What do you do with your lefties, with Rayleigh or with Taylor? Stanek is in. He's in paternity protocol. Well, paternity leave right now. So, you know, he'll be back though. He'll be on the postseason roster. But you got a lot of decisions to make between now and postseason roster time. And one of them is going to be if Siri is spectacular when he gets to a team. He was spectacular at the start of this season with Sugarland, and he's been spectacular right now with the Astros. This is going to be very interesting down the stretch to see who's playing and who's going to be playing on the postseason roster. I'm okay with starting Myers in center field. I mean, he's the fastest guy you got, the best fielding center fielder you got. He's come through with clutch hit after clutch hit late in big situations. I'm okay with that. But Siri's making it interesting, and so is McCormick, coming up with the big home run the other day here to beat the Diamondbacks in the eighth. And, you know, he's the guy that I thought was going to take over when Miles Straw was traded, and it turns out it turns into Myers, and now it might be turning into Siri. Holy crap. So that's fun. I mean, that is something that you're going to have to deal with as you head down the stretch here. 713-780-3776. If you've got any thoughts on that, you're more than welcome to do that.
I mean, it's not a bad problem to have.
No, it's a great problem.
It's, Which guy do we, I mean, hey, we've got 40 bats. We can only take so many into the postseason. All right, guys. I mean, down the stretch, unless your name is Bregman, Altuve, Alvarez, Brantley, Correa, everybody else, you get your ass out there and you better start slugging them as fast, as hard as you can. Because everybody else needs to, we need to know. Well, I guess Maldonado, because you're guaranteed to take him no matter what, even when his bat's cold as ice.
Yep.
But
yep.
Everybody else, you know what? You want to be on this roster in the playoffs? You get out there and you crush them.
You better be hitting, because right now you got a lot of tough decisions to make as for this playoff roster. There's no question about that. 713-780-3776, the number to get in here with us.
I'm watching, by the way, some of the ESPN showing some of the 15-yard penalties for taunting. It's stuff that's happened in the league forever. It's going to take a while. The incomplete in a receiver's face is going to be one of the hardest habits for cornerbacks to break. It's going to take a long time. The spinning the football?
Yep.
That happens all the time. Are they going to get you for the first, if you do a first down? If you do a first down in front of a player's face while looking at him, that's, what's the difference between that and incomplete?
You're taunting.
That's going to be taunting, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you saw stupid stuff like, who scored it? Had the pick six for Tampa, not Mike Davis, but Mike Edwards. He turned around and looked at whoever was chasing him. I don't think it was, maybe it was Mike Davis chasing him. Whoever was chasing him on his pick six, he turned around and looked at him. Flag. Like it is going to take a while for these guys to get done with it, but 15 yards is a lot.
Yeah.
Do you agree with, I've heard Dan Orlovsky on the broadcast, I've heard Joel Klatt talk about this, and then Dusty Dvorak was the third person on college broadcast I heard say the same thing. Dusty Dvorak, by the way, I think is really good on broadcast. They believe that targeting has got to be, the automatic ejection for targeting has got to be eliminated by college football. What do you think?
I don't know. I think it's a real deterrent. I do. I think the guys are tackling better now, and I think the fear of being ejected. I think if it's blatant, you take a guy out and you use the crown of your helmet, you're really risking that guy is going to be out for the rest of the game. So that I'm not now. I do like it's being reviewed, because there are plenty of these calls that are getting overturned. That I like. But I'm telling you, all defensive backs are tackling a lot different now and approaching it a lot different now. And we're seeing there's incidental and there's accidental, but lowering your head you got to eliminate it from the game. And you know what? It's not only for the safety of the other guy, it's for your safety.
But do you think that, I'm with you, but do you think that there needs to be like a flagrant one, flagrant two type situation?
Yeah, I think so.
I do too.
Yeah.
Because some of them, when it's incidental that you're helmet-to-helmet contact, like I'll give you an example. So I posted a video when it happened of this. This guy is a lunatic on the special teams for Seattle. He came screaming down and just put a beautiful crunch. Like it was a car crash of a hit on a Titans kick returner. And there was nothing wrong with it. No penalty was called. Titans fans, it's helmet to helmet. There is going to be an element of two helmets touching on most tackles. I think it has to be intent. There has to be a lowering of the helmet is one. And I'd like to see college football, if they're going to be that penal, I think there needs to be an opportunity for an official, even if it's not on the game official, if it's done at a remote location, you need to start determining.
I think that lowering the head I think if you make it so penal that guys won't lower their heads and it's for their own good,
that's not a bad thing.
Now, I think there's two different things, though. There's one, there's lowering your helmet to make a tackle, and there's another is using your helmet as a weapon. If you're flying through the air and you're lowering your head and you're using your helmet as a weapon, I think that deserves an ejection. I do. But I think if you're, you know, in midfield or coming up and making a tackle, and there's contact between your helmet and the runner's helmet, I think that's a lot of instances that's you can't help it. You can't help it. Man, we're seeing a lot of there was a call last week with a quarterback sack. Oh, the Jameis. It was the Packers. Jameis gets hit, and it was a perfect form tackle, and he gets taken down, and they call. Now, the Packers weren't going to win that game against the Saints, but it was like, really, dude? That guy did everything that you told him you're supposed to do.
Did he fall on him with his weight? Because that's going to be an automatic 15.
No, he did not. He just he took him out. Jameis's feet, it was perfect. It was perfect form. Perfect form. But it was a hard hit because he's flying. He's mm-hmm. He's running fast, and he's flying. And it was just ridiculous, ridiculous. 843 ESPN 97.5. Simple, Lance. It's Simple Seats.
Simple Seats. Go to Simple Seats right now. I'll pull up Simple Seats for you, and this is what we're going to take a look at. And I'm going to give you an example. When you go to Simple Seats, now here's a great thing. It's like a one-click shopping where you don't have to go through multiple pages. You're not going to have a convenience fee put on there at all. Texans Panthers, I'll click on that. You're looking to get in the building for that one? You want to go see a Thursday night game? You can do zone seating. What they have is zone seating. And zone seating would be the Gridiron Prime, the Mezzanine and Loge, Field Level, Gridiron, and then you go to individual seats. You can pick your individual seats. This is the great thing. If you pick a certain area, like a zone, they will find you the best price possible. That's how you end up saving money. But you can get into the building for $19 right now. And remember, there's no fee. So if you want to get there, bring four of you out there, four times 19 is $76. You're at their $76. You're not going to see the additional convenience fees and things like that. You go out there, you tailgate, you have a good time on Thursday when Texans take on the Panthers. But they've got Astros tickets for you as well, the Longhorns, the Aggies, the Cougars, the Dynamo. And SimpleSeats.com is run by a local Houston-based man. He worked for on the business side with the Astros. This guy understands how it works and how the experience can be better for you, the user, and they've created a great product. Go to SimpleSeats.com, compare your tickets against anyone else in the market, and see if they don't have the lowest rates. Simple Seats, better prices, no fees at SimpleSeats.com.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Patrolling the Houston sports radio scene for 20 years. Well, minus a few years where Lance took a little detour. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, 848 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 7-3-7-8-0-3-7-7-6. 7-3-7-8-0-3-7-7-6. We were talking about the Astros and the playoff roster in the last. Lance wasn't in here at the time. James wants to get in here and talk about it. What do you say, James?
Hello, good morning, y'all. How y'all doing?
Good, man.
Doing good.
All right. I want to talk about the Astros. Not much about the playoffs, but I want to talk about the Astros next year. Priority number one is we've got to keep Carlos. We got to keep him. He's our leader. He's been through it with all the scandal and everything, being the one to speak up and everything. That's priority number one. Number two, we got to let Verlander walk. Frankie, I'm sorry, but you suck now. You got to go. And three, trade Brantley and get an ace because we need a young and a solid one that's going to be consistent. Thank y'all. Have a good day.
Yeah.
Trade Brantley next year, I guess, and get an ace. That's not enough for an ace.
No, you ain't getting no ace with Brantley.
You mean Brantley and Pedro Leon?
Okay. Now, maybe. No, I'd say go out and sign a big free agent and you use that Carlos money. I disagree. With priority one is getting a number one stud pitcher. That's priority one for this team. I think that's
exist?
That's. Yeah, they
on
exist.
On the market?
Yeah.
I think this year?
Kevin Gausman would be, he would be an ace for this team. And you know what? He's done that for the Giants, and the Giants are the best team in baseball.
Close enough.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Kevin Gausman would be, and Kevin Gausman will cost you, and you use that Carlos Verlander Grinky money, and you go out and do that. I disagree that Carlos is priority one. I would love to see Carlos stay, but you're offensively, you'll be, and defensively, you'll be just fine. You won't be as good. Carlos has been spectacular and he's even better. If he plays his ass off in the postseason and wins baseball games like he did last year, and it is going to be the hardest breakup. You've been here. Nolan Ryan leaving was that was a kick in the nuts.
Well, because it was like a McMullen deal, but Nolan was never the player. Like Nolan's best times were past him with the A's. Like the Astros never saw the very best of Nolan. He had some good times, but he was never the pure ace with the Astros. Not like Carlos Correa, where, well, it's just different. Nolan's one of those weird guys who pitched great, but had some walks, had bad luck, getting good offense going behind him. You know, his numbers don't match the record. That's just the truth. But
you'll survive this just like you survived Springer. You know what? Everybody, oh, you got to sign Springer. We got Springer. We love Springer. He's the heart of the team. And you know what? You're just as good.
Here's my question for you, John. Are the Giants any good this year?
Yeah, they're great.
Why would they let Gossman go?
He's a free agent.
No, but I know. But why not? Why not pay?
Well, maybe they'll. You know, and maybe he'll want to stay there.
Here's your starters.
But you never know.
Who are the starters that you're paying a ton of money?
Well, the Giants did not figure to be what they are this year.
I think financially, I think there's some room financially for them to pay him what he wants, because his season is so good right now. Looking at all the numbers for him, it's just really, really terrific.
Yeah.
It is going to cost a lot of money, but why would the Giants not keep him in place if they have the money?
Well, a lot of teams want to keep guys in place, but they just can't because they lose him. Because the guy, well, I don't know that Gossman would want to come. I have no idea. No one does. And he probably, with the way that they're playing right now, would love to stay and say, I don't know. Maybe his family hates. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is with Kevin Gossman. But if he's a free agent, you go after him and you try to get him. Yeah, no, this team is this. It would be wonderful to grab him, to have him at the top of the rotation. Without Greinke, you'd have Gossman, then McCullers, Fromber, Urquidy and Garcia. That'll be a hell of a rotation next year.
Mm-hmm.
Be a hell of a rotation next year. So no, I, you know, you go find somebody like that. Although you're right, it ain't easy. Who name all the guys like that? There's that guy.
Yeah, there's that.
You know,
guy,
I mean,
not much.
You know, there's the Scherzers out there. I don't know how much time is left and how much money he's going to want. You know, he was supposed to, wherever he went, he was supposed to get that deal done. So he'll probably stay with the Dodgers. Boy, would the Dodgers hate picking him up for a half a year and then he goes to the Astros?
Oh, they're not letting him go anywhere.
And then he goes to the Astros?
Yeah, no, they wouldn't. They'll just put the wallet on him.
Yeah.
It ain't gonna matter.
No.
So Gossman right now, his adjusted salary. So his salary is $18.9 right now. He makes pretty good money. Buster Posey is making $22 million a year. How much longer does Buster have on his contract? Because the high-dollar guys, I'm trying to see if they are all, how many of those guys are leaving.
Well, you pay Buster Posey anyway. Buster Posey's spectacular. I mean, you just give Buster Posey whatever he wants.
He's in the final year of his contract.
This is the last year. He's got a club option.
Yeah,
for 22.
Club option at $22 million. Yeah, Johnny enough. Cueto's
he's
got a,
and guess what? They're going to pick up that.
So
22.
Cueto's got a club option for $22 million. Brandon Crawford is still on the roster, and Evan Longoria is still on the roster, but for adjusted salary numbers. So I don't know. I wouldn't scratch off. That's a really good team. You want to stay good. I wouldn't scratch off the Giants as being maybe a leader in the clubhouse for Gossman if he likes it.
Yeah,
but that's the guy you look at for sure.
Yeah.
If you want to take your money, if you want to let Carlos leave and walk, but the Astros have never been those guys. They don't do it through free agency. They'll trade, and they want advantageous salary situations or, you know, contractually have some club control on it. But with Gossman, at least you would know, yeah, you're paying a lot of money, but at least you would know he's yours. It didn't cost you any draft picks or it didn't cost you any prospects. You know, that's probably the way to go. Could you get him for 5 years? You'd hope, but those days, you know, they're just driving the housing market up. These idiots like San Diego and the Mets are just doing stupid contracts. And so The price of the housing market has gone up and up and up.
Well,
5 years don't cut it anymore. Six doesn't cut it. You got to start at nine.
Well, and you know, you've said this before, is what are the Astros willing to do to get the biggest name players? And the answer is they're not. I can tell you this. An agent said just this week, behind the scenes, Jim Crane had told him, "I ain't. You know how hard it is to make $200 million? I ain't doing no $200 million contracts. I ain't doing it."
It just doesn't surprise me that they don't want to get involved with paying the premium rate. The premium price is 8 year guaranteed and up. It starts at eight. And once you start dealing with the Carlos Correa, you're looking at 25 plus. Really, it's 30. 30 plus for Carlos Correa. 8 years, that's 240. You already said Jim Crane says no.
Yeah. Jim Crane says I don't know that Jim Crane's philosophy is long term. He did Altuve at a 7 year, $163 million deal. I think that's the cap. That's a cap.
We can act like the Astros are going to perform. They're going to do the same thing that everyone else does. But I don't think that's. I just don't think that's viable for them. That's not their modeling.
It's not their model. And you know what? I'm kind of glad it's not their model.
It's a good thing. It hurts, but I think they're trying to do what's best for the squad's long-term interest. But in the short term, you're going to miss some guys. You're going to lose some guys who are heart and soul of the team.
Yep. And you lost out on George Springer because you wouldn't give him 6 years, 150. You know what? That was a win. You're still as good. You've got the out. I mean, you can't have more. What a glut they have in the outfield right now, which is a positive thing.
Hey, can you tell me what Jose Siri did last night?
Yeah, he homered again in his first
base. Oh, so he's got four homers already. Yeah. Okay, I was just checking.
Yeah, no. You're just checking, or did you really know that?
I knew it.
You knew it already?
Spoiler alert, I knew it.
Yeah, you knew that.
What do you think Georgie's hitting for the year, Springer? Remember, he got off to a slow start.
Well, he got off to a no start.
Yeah. How do you think he's hitting?
I had to guess. I have no idea. I'm going to say 262.
George is hitting 246. His OPS is 865. That's not bad.
No, that's George.
I mean, it's his lowest since 2016, but
his lowest average.
Yeah, it's not bad. He's got more home runs.
You know what? If he had played more, he'd be up in the about 260. He's about a 260 hitter. That's what he does.
But here's the thing: 286 plate appearances. Now he's played in 66 games, so there's not a lot you can do with that. But
he's
RBI total. 37 RBIs, it would have been okay. I mean, he would have had a regular season. This year, if he'd have stayed healthy, with the slump.
Or better, because he goes on hot streaks, and he'll, you know, or better. Because, he hasn't been as good. George is about a 260-something hitter. He'll knock in 80 to 90 runs.
But you're right not to do that deal.
You're right. Yeah. No, absolutely. And you know what? You might be right not to do the Carlos deal, too. 858 ESPN 97.5, 713-780, 3776. Fleas, termites, mosquitoes, ants. Save your home, save your family from mosquitoes. I did. I got the mosquito murdering system in the backyard, and I can tell you, it's one of the best buys you'll ever make because you can actually go in the backyard and enjoy it as opposed to not being able to go back there because of the mosquitoes. The mosquitoes are killing you, and especially if your kids play back there and your kids are back there a lot and you're just attacking those kids. They love kids. Mosquitoes love kids. So you want a mosquito murdering system so that they're not going to attack your kids. Screw the mosquitoes. Kill them, okay? That's what Scott McGrath does. He is a serial bug killer. That's what he does. Ants, roaches, fleas, spiders, bed bugs. If you're gross if you have bed bugs. Get rid of bed bugs. 281-469-8240. McGrath Pest Control will get this job done for you. They're wonderful. You will love to. It's a locally owned and operated company, and Scott McGrath has grown this into a huge operation. 281-469-8240, but still has the local touch to it, okay? And the guy is right here, Scott McGrath. 281-469-8240 or McGrathPestControl.com.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. When the crowd goes wild. Real fun sports.